I'm so adamant that if you train your puppy from the start, you won't need rehabilitation. If you sit back and you're just like, let the puppy be the puppy, and training is just for problem dogs, you think about it that way, you think about it intervention instead of prevention, you're gonna have to do a lot more work and it's gonna be messy and there's gonna be a lot of pushback behavior from your dog. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Honest to Dog. It's Liz, your favorite dog trainer, and I have with me Jeff Gadway for another episode of your favorite podcast.
I hope it's your favorite podcast.
I'm just making all sorts of assumptions over here.
We are talking about behavior modification, and we're deliberately using this turn of phrase and not training. Why?
Because they're two separate things.
They're
or
not
different.
The same.
Yeah, they're
That's
not the
right.
same.
The difference between training, intervention, and rehabilitation, and talk about what the attributes or characteristics of those three different strategies are, how they're different, why they're different, and hopefully to leave people with the takeaway that you want to start training as soon as possible to avoid intervention and avoid rehabilitation.
Yeah, I always say prevention over intervention.
Right. And what this led me to think about was that old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, mm-hmm. right? Which is probably like making me sound like I'm 80 years
old. I was like, yeah,
old.
It sounds very Shakespearean.
Yeah. But the idea is if you can get ahead of problems and instill the right behaviors and right neural pathways early on with your dog, you won't have to go back and fix things, which becomes increasingly harder and harder the older the dog gets. Mm-hmm. So we had this aha moment a couple of weeks ago where somebody asked about, you know, should I start training now or should I start training at 6 months? And we did the math mm-hmm. on the difference between training now versus training down the road, right? And I think this will be a good segue into the distinction between training, intervention, and rehabilitation and why it's so important. But you know, quick back of the napkin math here. If you waited till your dog was 6 months doing two walks a day, that's 360 walks. And if you haven't taught your dog to do it right from the beginning, you've maybe been doing the walk wrong 360 times. That's 360 times leashing the dog up wrong, 360 times doing
doorways incorrectly.
Doorways and thresholds wrong. Well, what if your dog meets two dogs on each of these walks? That's 720 interactions, social interactions that are maybe set up for failure. And so it's so critical to get it right from the beginning so that you put in the reps the right way. It's not, what's the other thing that I learned? I've got all these old like adages that make me feel like I'm
wise.
Wise.
Very
that's it.
Wise. Very yes. wise. Not old.
It's
wise.
Not, I think I had a music teacher in high school who said, it's not practice that makes perfect. It's perfect practice that makes perfect. So you want to learn the right approaches to doing these things early and then put in those reps so that as your dog matures, it's going to be hardwired for success.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to end up spending more time, effort, and money the longer you wait.
So let's get into that. Training versus intervention versus rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. Some people might think that it's three words for the same thing, mm-hmm. but in actuality, they're three very different training strategies.
Mm-hmm. And this is just my interpretation of it. Other people might think differently than me, but for me, training is programming a response that you want, a behavior in the dog.
From a clean slate.
Yeah, it's starting fresh. We're not cleaning anything up. We're just teaching you new.
It happens early, right? Like training is starting kind of from the beginning, from mm-hmm. puppy, right from the take home, and programming that dog with the right, I was going to say commands, but it's not a computer, right? Mm-mm. We're not trying to build a robotic dog, but instilling the right behaviors from early on so that they are just part of that dog's DNA, essentially.
Well, what you're doing is you're giving very clear house rules or setting really clear rules and boundaries from the start that are just, this is how it's going to be here. And you make it really simple for the dog. You're not changing anything partway through. You're not giving all this freedom and then going to tighten up on it later. I'm so adamant that if you train your puppy from the start, you won't need rehabilitation. You won't even need intervention, because if you're being really thoughtful about it, if you've worked with a trainer before you get your puppy and then continue that relationship during the first few months of having your puppy, really, I become very involved in my clients' raising of their puppy. When they come to us for puppy training, whether that's one-on-one or group, they end up doing daycare and doing all the right things from that young age, that we maybe clean up a couple things when the dog turns about, or usually around 6 to 8 months, because they're testing more boundaries. But then that's it. Like, and then they have this superstar, amazing dog for life, and they don't have to come to me with problem behaviors later on. So when we start from a clean slate and we're pretty much programming all the expectations we have of this dog, life becomes easy for that dog, and it just goes, okay, I accept, and this is how it is.
And I think the other thing that comes along with training is a comfort with learning, right? And a comfort with discipline, structure, rules, boundaries, limitations. If the dog is accustomed to that from the early phases, it's easier to input new commands into the into the dog, right?
Well, this is the thing too. You can progress so much further, so much quicker.
Right.
So you can, from the start with your puppy, what are you going to work on? You're going to work on crating and leash manners and commands. And then we're going to grow from that to heel command. Then we're going to work on like perfect recall. Then we're going to go to place, like grow on socialization. You can move through. You're going from kindergarten to elementary school to high school to university with your dog, with training in that first year. Versus if you sit back and you're just like, let the puppy be the puppy. I'm training is just for problem dogs. You think about it that way. You think about it intervention instead of prevention. You're going to have to do a lot more work, and it's going to be messy, and there's going to be a lot of pushback behavior from your dog because you weren't consistent, and all of a sudden you just changed one day. And so it takes way more effort to do intervention.
So before we jump to intervention, two more questions for you on training. First of all, what is a realistic timeline for training in terms of when should somebody start training? And this is a little bit of a softball question. And then second, how long might the training process take, right? And we'll revisit these questions for intervention and rehabilitation as well. So that's the first question. And then my second question is, thinking about our dogs, which would fall into the training bucket?
So training should start before you get your dog. Training for you. Training starts with your dog when your dog comes home with you. So from day one. And really what's kind of funny is, regardless, you're training. Whether you're being involved and intentional about it, or being really not involved, intentional, just sit back, really carefree about it, you're still in a way programming the dog for the behaviors, because you're just letting them choose whatever
that's right
they want. So even in not training, you're training. I would say training, some dogs can pick up things really, really quickly. So I would say anywhere from like 2 to 4 weeks in terms of training a new behavior and being able to expect that from the dog. If you're consistent, if you put in a lot of reps, you can probably do it in 2 weeks if you want to take your time. And this is how I think about it with dogs, just like they can be very similar to humans in developing a new behavior and a habit can take 30 days. So if you're working on something daily, then you could still get there in 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And then when you think right. about our pack, which of our dogs would you say we focused more on training?
That would probably be Baker, because he was still young when we got him. He was a puppy at 4 months. And so there was a lot that he didn't know that we got to program. So he didn't go on many walks with his foster. So that was starting with a blank canvas there. We're like, okay, walks, this is how we do this. And so that was super easy with him to train. He was already beautifully crate trained, potty trained, kind of. And so, yeah, he was more training. I mean, there was some elements of intervention with his socialization, but it was really so smooth with him because we got that early start. We did training more than anything.
Perfect. So that's training. The next step from training, if we haven't addressed an issue at the training phase, what comes next?
Intervention. Intervention is then the next step in terms of fixing behaviors. So the difference between training and intervention, training is just the what do I want? Intervention is don't do that, do this instead. It's reshaping a behavior, unlearning what you've previously been doing and now learning this new way. So that's going to take a lot longer.
Right. Because you have to tear down what already exists before you can build up something new.
Exactly.
Right.
So this is where I work a lot with clients, is predominantly intervention.
Okay.
So this is usually for a handful of minor issues. So leash pulling, jumping up, medium to low level reactivity, counter surfing, lack of boundaries in the house, like those sorts of behaviors.
And as a dog trainer, when you think about intervention, is the unlearning and the learning, are they two separate steps or can they kind of happen concurrently? Because it almost feels to me like trying to unlearn and teach in the same moment could be overwhelming for a dog, could be confusing or sending mixed signals. So how do you approach that? Don't do that, do this instead. Is it two steps? Is it kind of like one step? How do you think about that?
Ooh, that's a really good question and kind of tricky to answer because it would probably change depending on the dog and the intensity and how long it's been practicing that behavior. Really, I want to help dogs learn the no instead, the disagreement, then pair it and teach it with do this instead. Mind you, there are other dogs that I've been able to sandwich it with pretty much off the hop. Yeah, you just have to cater to the dog in that situation. I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer than that.
No, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. And I guess, you know, it depends on how ingrained that behavior is, right? Mm-hmm. And like, are we closer to the border of training versus intervention or getting closer to the upper bound of intervention to rehab, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's all going to dictate your strategy.
Exactly.
Because it's a spectrum, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you think about the time scale, and I know like this is all guidelines, nothing is set in stone, right? Like you shouldn't be setting your calendar by, you know, these timelines.
No, Liz said it would be this time exactly. Not saying that.
But if training is like, you can instill a brand new behavior from a blank slate in like 2 to 4 weeks, how long would you expect it to take to intervene and sort of unlearn and reteach a behavior?
Mm-hmm. This is going to take a longer period of time than training, like we said, but not as long as rehabilitation. So this is probably that midway point of 3 months to 6 months. Again, depending on how long the dog has been practicing the behavior. So that's going to be really different if I'm working with a year-old dog versus a seven-year-old dog. Understanding that some dogs might even take longer, even though they're in the intervention stage.
You raise a really good point, though, Liz, that here, maybe there isn't a guideline so much as thinking about it in a proportional response, right? Like if your dog has been practicing the wrong behavior for a year, well, then guess what? It's probably going to take you like at least a year. I mean, that might sound really extreme, but it's kind of like, you know, I say this in business a lot to my clients, you're not going to get yourself out of a problem overnight that you've got yourself into over the course of 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. If you've been building the wrong culture at your business over 5 years, you can't fix it in a month, right? It's the same thing with a dog. If you've been building the wrong behavior on a walk for a year, 2 years, 3 years, it's going to take a lot of reps to undo the reps that you put in.
And being consistent. And if you think about it, a lot of training and intervention are done at the hands of a dog owner. So you also have to make room for being human and error during intervention. So, and that's not bad. Like you'll have setbacks. Dogs are living, breathing beings. They can have good days. They can have bad days. They can have an off stomach. And, you know, just like we can have a bad sleep and maybe not be our best self showing up for work. All those things you have to take into consideration because we're not programming a computer.
Yeah.
We are teaching a dog how to be in the world.
That's right. It's kind of like, you know, it's not going to be a linear process. Mm-hmm. There's going to be two steps forward, one step back. It's not like you're training AI to detect, you know, the difference between, have you seen this? The AI detecting the difference between corgis and loaves of bread?
No.
Okay, look up, anyone who's listening right now, stop what you're doing, go on Google and look up
Tim's doing it right
corgi
now.
Corgi or loaf of bread. And one of the things that they do with AI is they, you know, they train it to distinguish, you know, images and stuff. But it's a linear process. The more you input into the system, the faster it's going to get better at it. And it really just goes up, right? Like there's no step backwards. But like you said, these are dogs. These are living, breathing animals. We're living, breathing people who make mistakes. And so it's going to take longer. So if we go back to that, you know, 6 month example, 6 months, 30 days a month, two walks a day, that's 360 walks. If you've been modeling the wrong behavior for a year, you've put in 720 reps of the wrong walk, you're not going to fix it after a month, 60 walks. It's probably not going to be after 2 months or 3 months because you are countering all of those reps you put in, maybe the wrong way. And that's assuming that you do it perfect every single time. And we're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes along the way.
The other factor that plays a role in how long your intervention process is going to be with your dog is how many issues are we working on correcting at this time? Because if we've got, what did I list before? Leash reactivity, pulling on leash, poor boundaries in the house, low-key separation anxiety. That's four things we have to fix. And so that's going to add to your time because the more things you have to learn and teach your dog how not to do and how to do. Yeah, we got to make room for a little bit of human error.
And it's not like those things are compartmentalized necessarily. They're oftentimes intertwined. So it adds complexity. It's not just that there's more issues and that you're going to tackle them in serial or in series. They're all intertwined. And so pulling those things apart and understanding the relationship between them, I mean, all of that adds more time, more reps, more complexity.
Yeah, exactly. Training is pretty clean and even and neat. Intervention gets progressively more messy.
Yeah.
And then rehab is like, woo.
So before we jump to rehab, let's talk about maybe a dog or two that you have had the opportunity to work on in that intervention phase. So, you know, first, of our dogs, are there any that, you know, have exhibited kind of behaviors that have needed intervention? And then even more broadly, can you think of a dog where you've done some intervention work with the owner?
I would say Carmen was our intervention case.
Low-key intervention.
Yeah, like super low-key. Where we had, what were the issues? Jumping up. She was a jumper-upper on people. Jumper-upper-pupper. And we had one instance where she growled around the food bowl. And I was like terrified. It was full-fledged resource aggression. Those two things really went away with,
Two other things. Low-level destruction.
She would, we called it sorting the recycling. She would knock over the garbage and just like pick through it. Never really taking anything. Just had to throw it around to let us know she was not impressed. And then chewing things. She chewed one of my flip-flops and
some DVD cases. She worked at Blockbuster restocking. I thought you were going to say, like, I think for a very brief period of time, she had issues with people in uniforms and people with like canes or walkers, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, as we listed out, you know, and again, Carmen came to us. She was already like a year and was a street dog. And then had somebody kind of as a foster who maybe instilled some not so ideal behaviors. So they like trained some things that we needed to untrain.
True.
But I think it was a pretty smooth process. Like
it really
she was,
very
receptive, right?
And it was because she didn't get to practice any of these things really more than once with you and I. Like when we saw a behavior happen, we were like, oh, no. Shut that down. That doesn't happen here. We're not letting this become a problem. We never were like, that's a one-off, or let's see how, if that was just because she was feeling off or whatever. Let's see what happens next time. We took it really seriously. And that's what I really want to hammer home with intervention is like, get on it from the start because it can be a lengthy process, but it doesn't have to be. If you catch it the first time your dog does it and you don't allow it to become a habit, then we can avoid a lot of deep training work.
Yeah. Speaking of sorting the recycling, this is how we got introduced to another one of your clients, Harley.
Oh, yeah.
So Do you want to tell the backstory on Harley?
No, I want you to you were the one that put it all together.
So Harley, what kind of dog was Harley?
A mini doodle.
A mini doodle. I saw Harley, a little video of Harley. The owner came home. Harley had flipped over the recycling, sorted the recycling, you know, pulled everything out. And so I messaged this owner on Instagram. I said, hey, I see you're having some trouble with Harley. My wife is a dog trainer. You know, she works with a lot of people on these exact types of issues. You know, she's been doing this for 10 years. She's trained with some of the best in the business, like Cesar Millan. Would you be interested in exploring, you know, some training for Harley? And so the person who some of you might recognize, Heather Rae Young from the show Selling Sunset on Netflix, was really receptive to the idea, was actually really eager to get a little bit of help. And so, you know, Liz did a little bit of like pre-training consultations by phone and then flew out to LA and worked with Heather and Harley over the course of several days to do some of this intervention and helping Harley to unlearn some of these things and build some new behaviors. So do you want to maybe talk about a few of those things that you worked on with Heather and Harley and what the end result was at the end of that weekend?
She was so grateful that you reached out and put us together, and we got on the phone together and we're talking, and she's like, yeah, that's not the big issue. The big issue is, or she wrote this to you actually, he's horrible with other dogs, like super reactive. And then you were like, oh, that's really Liz's jam. Like, she will help you. And so she was so excited for that. And I'm trying to prep, and I gave her some homework to do before going out there because I was expecting this to be a serious intervention case because he also had reactivity around a romantic interest that she had. And so that was causing friction, obviously. So there was a lot of jealousy, a bit of separation anxiety, and this reactivity. So I'm going, okay, already he was a 2-year-old, I think, rescue. And so we've got three issues. The dog's been practicing that. And then we also knew some lifestyle changes had to be made inside the home. And so I'm like, okay, we've got work to do here. Really quickly, we saw the results because, one, Heather's awesome. She's a good student. She was so keen to learn it. She's got great energy. And this dog was a really good match for her. And so we were able to implement things like crating, place, and proper leash walking.
Follow the leader.
Yeah.
Loose leash walking.
And we spent about 3 days with her.
Mm-hmm.
And the progress we saw was so phenomenal. Like, it blew me away a little bit because I was like, we got to make this happen. There was pressure on it because we flew out to LA to do this for her. And
but by the end of the weekend, we should post some of these videos.
I'm
sure she's cool with this. But like by the end of the weekend, she was walking a few dogs, loose leash, no big deal. Harley was totally cool with Baker. He was totally comfortable in the crate. I think another big thing she wanted to be able to do was take him to like patios and stuff.
Because he was quite anxious.
Yeah.
About that sort of stuff, and he was so calm. I was just so stoked, but she really did catch it early. That's what catching intervention early can do. And when you buy into the program or work with a trainer, like go all in and you'll see the results way faster.
Totally.
Like, trainers are telling you what to do because they know. We're not making you do things because we think it's fun to make your life harder. We genuinely want to see our clients succeed. So just trust us, trust the process, do everything we say, and you'll be that much more successful more quickly.
And maybe one final thing to comment on with Heather that I think set her up for success is that she had her roommate really get on board with the training too. And so when we think about, you know, everybody modeling the right behaviors and putting in the reps and there being consistency and clear expectations, that really helped to ensure that Harley was set up for success and that everybody was on the same page with the training and the strategies so that there wasn't kind of steps backwards when Heather wasn't present.
And yeah, it's so important during the intervention stage that everyone's on board.
So very positive experience. Mm-hmm. We'll post some videos. I think that'd be really fun.
Feeling anxious, doubting yourself,
lacking confidence, seeking calmness, looking to channel your inner badass.
We've got the solution.
What is it, Liz?
Affirmation cards for pack leaders.
We start our day every day by having coffee and pulling an affirmation card that sets us up with a thought and a focus for the day. And ever since we've been doing it, it's totally been a game changer.
I'm obsessed, and I tell everybody that they should do affirmations. We've been doing it for like over a year. Really does make a difference.
And so recently, Liz decided, hey, you know what? We need affirmation cards for pack leaders.
Absolutely.
Really specially tailored for dog owners. And so that's exactly what Liz has gone and built. The Calm Confident Leadership Affirmation Cards include 36 different cards sorted into cards focused on developing calm, building confidence, and asserting leadership.
So you can shuffle them up and pull one at random, or you can pull one specifically tailored towards calmness, confidence, or leadership.
Whatever you need on that given day.
Keep it in your pocket, put it in your wallet, take a picture, post it to your Instagram, and allow that energy to empower you.
We've created a limited first run of these affirmation cards. If you want to check them out, they're on the Doghouse website, www.doghaus.ca, and click on affirmation cards at the top of the page.
Remember, this is a limited run. We only have so many, so don't miss out.
To make it really easy, we've put a quick link in the bio. You can go check them out and grab a deck before it's too late.
Once again, you can head over to Doghouse's website to grab your own calm, confident leadership affirmation cards for pack leaders.
And we look forward to seeing you post pictures of the card you pull on Instagram and tag us at Honest to Dog Podcast.
Now back to the show.
Finally, let's talk about rehabilitation, which is sort of the third phase. If we haven't been able to instill the right teachings from the beginning early on, and we didn't catch it in that intervention stage where we can kind of unlearn and correct, then it comes to rehabilitation, which you've described before as more management.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say rehabilitation is management. That can be the outcome sometimes.
Okay.
So rehabilitation to me is your dog needs to go to a professional because the behaviors have become so dangerous or out of control that this dog needs the whole system rebooted. It's usually dogs who have practiced a behavior for a lot longer. So going to a trainer who can be really intentional and understand that literally everything that they are doing with the dog is this reprogramming, this rehab of, I'm going to teach you how to live.
It's complete immersion.
Yes, really. Thank you. That was what I was looking for. So you want that to go to somebody who knows exactly how to use the leash and in what way and what to reinforce and what to address and how to use their body to communicate to the dog. And they're going to do so many repetitions, it's ridiculous. So intervention is kind of just practice it a little bit more than you would on average. Like, and this is the thing, what do I ask my clients to do? They have to practice sit for half an hour with their dog. What do they have to do in puppy class? Puppy class, they usually have to do about 30 repetitions of a command in a day. And I say you could, like, don't do all 30 at once if we're dealing with a baby puppy brain. Do 10, 10, and 10, or 15 and 15. But with a rehabilitation case, they are going to do as many repetitions as it takes for the dog to learn it. Let the dog have a break, and then repeat that over and over and over in a controlled environment where the dog is going to succeed. It is going to break through and come through the other side. Some of rehabilitation, I will say, is not going to be pretty. Some of the stuff you have to work through, which again is why it should go to a professional who knows how to be one step ahead of the dog to prevent escalation of a problem, to stay safe, to mitigate and calm things down, not amp things up. And why it's really important for a professional to do your rehabilitation is because they don't have an emotional attachment to your dog. And I'm not saying that they're heartless. I'm not saying they don't love dogs. They love them so much that they know how to be neutral with them to teach them. They're going to hold the dog accountable. They're literally like a teacher for a kid.
Right.
They're not going to do inappropriate touching or get like very involved. They're going to be a role model, and they're going to teach and implement the right stuff. They're going to disagree when they step out of line, but it's all a professional relationship.
So I might have gotten ahead of myself a little bit when I said rehabilitation kind of equals management. I think what we're meaning to say is that if a dog is in a rehabilitative state, maybe one of the strategies that you're going to have to use is managing a certain degree of behavior that,
yes,
you know, perhaps eradicating that behavior altogether and resetting to a blank slate isn't realistically feasible. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that dog, you know, because it's had so many reps and the problem is so acute, maybe like perfection is off the table for you. Mm-hmm. And so you need to reset your expectations and lower the bar just a little bit. I'm not saying give up on your dog. I'm not saying mm-hmm. that at all. But part of the strategy is finding the right approaches to manage that behavior and mitigate it from getting any worse and trying to seek incremental gains mm-hmm. versus complete perfection.
So for me, like if you want an example of hypothetically what a behavior that could lead to that outcome, let's say it's a red zone aggressive dog who has gotten into more than 3 fights and successfully injured, punctured, broke skin on another dog. That's one that the trainer might be able to get the dog to about 80%, where it might not be reacting on leash to other dogs, but maybe it can't be in an off leash free roaming space without a muzzle.
Right.
Right? Ever in its life. But it might not do anything, but like, let's be safe. It's thinking in the management cases, if there's a slight possibility it might happen, you must have extra precautions in place.
But if you think about it, I mean, and I don't think we should encourage people to think about that as a loss. That's actually a win, right? Mm-hmm. A dog that, you know, maybe was dog aggressive or person aggressive that is now capable of sharing space with a dog that they don't know, wearing a muzzle, and the dog feels confident and you feel confident and everybody's safe. That's a win.
That's right? So much better than a life where he couldn't meet any other dogs on leash, off leash, muzzle, no muzzle. Like, yeah, that's more a life sentence, right? And rehabilitation doesn't have to be a life sentence. It's just, let's be smart about how we're doing things. So I know before you even asked me which one of our dogs it was Ty. And I realize now too, in doing this episode, how, and I've talked about this, I wrote a blog about it, how I feel like I failed him initially. I knew we were getting a dog with baggage. We were told that, and we were up for that challenge. I think I treated him as an intervention case, and I should have been doing rehabilitation. And so I jumped onto rehabilitation a bit late because I was expecting, I'll never forgive myself, but that's not it. Because I learned such a powerful lesson in the day that Ty nipped someone in our house. And I didn't have him on leash, and that was a huge fail. Like, I gave him too much freedom. We were trying to do place or sit on the dog or something, and then did a release, right? Like, so I controlled the introduction and all of this stuff, but I was giving him the off leash thinking, okay, he already knows the expectation of how to be, and he really didn't. He needed more rehabilitation and management in that moment, where I needed to put safety above and beyond. And I did doubt whether or not he could be off leash in the house with a couple people moving in our house. He was uncomfortable. I should have crated him, or I should have muzzled him and had way more of an active teaching role for him in that moment. I didn't just leave him to completely fend for himself, but that was a big aha moment for me in terms of, okay, go slower. The like rehab needs more repetitions, but it also needs to go at a slower pace for the dog.
I think that makes total sense. And the other thing with Ty that I will never forget is when you came home from working with Sherry Lucas and had that revelation about that with a rehabilitation dog like Ty, you kind of need to lower your expectations a little bit, that it's unfair to him and it's unfair to you or to us to expect that he is going to model perfect behavior mm-hmm. and that maybe achieving 80% is great and that is enough, right? And so by lowering the bar just a little bit and taking some of the pressure off him and some of the pressure off us, I think it really allowed him to thrive. And that's when we began to see really tremendous strides from him. And I don't know if dogs can move between these different things dynamically, but I don't necessarily see him as a rehabilitation dog.
No, I don't at all anymore.
That was going to be my next question. Like, through going through that rehabilitation, we've almost stepped him down.
Yeah, where we've actually been able to train him on some cool new things, like swimming, like supping, stand up, paddleboarding.
Yeah, I had to think about that for a second, like sup. So I think Ty is a huge win. He's taught us so much about ourselves, about working with a dog that came with a little bit of timidness and lack of confidence and insecurity. Mm-hmm. I continue to learn so much from Ty.
Yeah. So rehabilitation, what did I say, can take upwards of a year. And I'm not saying sending your dog to a board and train for a year is going to fix the behavior. No. Those professionals are going to get it done, again, depending on how many issues your dog has. But it's usually, for intensive cases, 4 to 6 weeks. It's going to be a pretty price tag for that. And then there's the process of getting the dog and the human aligned in that whole training process. And then they have to live like that in this new training world for a good chunk of time. So you almost have to start back with 30 days to learn the habit now with the human in the home, in that environment. You're pretty much you're stepping down from rehabilitation to intervention with your trainer and your dog in your home. And then that really becomes lifestyle.
Well, and that kind of goes to the last thing I wanted to say, or there's kind of two final thoughts. With some of these rehabilitation cases where management is the strategy, there might not be a time frame on that. That might be a lifelong thing, right? And the analogy I'll try to make, and I don't know, this might be a really poor one, I apologize. It's the caffeine, you know, coursing through my veins here. But I've been an asthmatic since I was a child, right? And there's nothing that's going to fix that. Right. So I've had to learn how to manage that on an ongoing basis, day to day, with the right tools, you know, finding the right medications, understanding my triggers, you know, all of those types of things. And I manage it pretty darn well. Right. I think the same can be said for dogs with certain types of issues, like that dog you described that, you know, maybe isn't able to be off leash in a dog park or without a muzzle. That might be your new normal. Yeah. Right. And, this goes to my second point, which is if you've got a strategy that's working.
Yes. Please.
Finish my sentence because I know you know where I'm going.
It's working for a reason. Keep it as it is.
Right.
Don't change anything.
And I think this goes to something that you've been seeing where people, particularly now, as people are looking for, you know, progression and getting out of the groundhog day that we've been living in for the last, you know, 8 years. People are looking to see some kind of like notable progression markers, and mm-hmm. they want to move away from the strategies that have proven to be effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as like a graduation.
But if it's working, why change it?
Exactly. I get that a lot with clients who use the slip as a figure eight, because they almost see, well, if it's over his muzzle, is that like a handicap for me? Am I like cheating? Do I need to graduate to him just being over the neck? It's like, no, you found a method of communication that works with your dog. Don't change it. We found the telephone line. Let's not move away from it. Or feeding in the crate. A lot of people want to move away from it. I'm like, what? I just made life so easy for you and your dog. We got rid of resource guarding. Why are we obsessed with moving it? What if this is the solution?
Right.
This doesn't get you to the solution. This is the solution.
Yes.
This is the thing too. Humans have this concept of time and goals and that whole process. Dogs don't. Dogs don't have that agenda. They're just living in the moment. So throw that timeline away. Forget about all of that. Actually, there's a really awesome trainer in Florida. Shout out to Walking Dog Trainer. She does really good graphics that like express this reality of dog training. And one of the ones I love is the process of dog training on like a graph, and it's like up, down, 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 up, 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 down, down. And it's kind of like, I love this. I hate this. This is hell. What am I doing? Oh my gosh, should I become a dog trainer? Like, it's all over the map, and that's part of the process. So don't shy away from it. Embrace it. Love it. And back to Sherry Lucas really quickly. She taught me grace and like compassion with dogs and myself and the process. where that's when I came home with Ty and I was like, I could breathe. I was like, wow, I was putting so much pressure, not only on this dog, but on me. And the second I let that go, I was like, you know what? We'll get to it when we get to it. I was trying to rush this whole process with this dog, being like, he's got to replace Carmen in my group classes. I'm going to take, I took like 2 weeks off of work. I'm like, I'm going to really dive in.
And you set this self-imposed arbitrary timeline to make it work. Whereas I think once we realized we need to move at his pace, what he's comfortable with, that's when things started coming into alignment and we started really seeing progress. And once we got on that train, then the results started to come in exponentially, right? Once he got on that
path
of confidence and safety and security, and he was trusting us and we were trusting him, we've come leaps and bounds. But it first, I'm going to use an expression that my friend Kevin Michalik gives me all the time. He's like, sometimes you need to slow down to speed up.
Yeah, I think we should wrap up with a Cesar Millan quote that he always says, you don't get the dog you want, you get the dog you need. And Ty was definitely a dog I needed to help me improve as a trainer. And I have learned so much from him. For that, I am forever grateful. And to anyone out there who might be working with a dog, whether it's in training or in intervention or in rehab, take this as a beautiful opportunity to learn all about dogs and just try to understand from the dog's point of view and go into dog psychology and understand not just how to fix the behavior, but why did the behavior happen in the first place? That's where everything changes. And it can be a really, really empowering thing to help a dog through an intervention or rehab. So don't feel shameful about it. Don't beat yourself up about it. You are where you are and where you're meant to be, and so is your dog. And it just, it can be a really beautiful journey together. I always talk about training as a journey because it is.
Love it. Thank you, Liz. This has been so enlightening, so insightful. Really appreciate you shedding some light on the difference between training, intervention, rehab. We'll see you next week.
Thanks so much for listening. And until next time, stay calm and assertive. Stay super calm and assertive.
If you like what you heard, hit that subscribe button and leave us a comment or a review. We'd love to hear from you.
We release a new podcast weekly. Follow us on Instagram at Honest to Dog Podcast.
Honest to Dog Podcast is hosted by Liz Foley and Jeff Gadway. The show is engineered, edited, and produced by me, Timothy Musa. For all things training and daycare, check out doghouse.ca. doghaus.ca.